Simply Authentic is the podcast where realtors and referral partners get the conversations they actually want to hear. I'm Crystal Forbes with Great American Title, a family-owned and operated title company with over 30 years serving the real estate community. We provide title and escrow services for both Missouri and Kansas with locations throughout Southwest Missouri. We focus on providing exceptional customer service and trustworthy, reliable title insurance coverage. Our relationships with other industry professionals are why we are able to make dreams come true one closing at a time. Great American Title is proud to sponsor the Simply Authentic podcast, bringing the most relevant, real, and sometimes challenging conversations that help all of us get better. Tune in, subscribe, and let's keep this industry moving forward together. Simply Authentic, recorded at the Gershman Mortgage Studios, available wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to the Simply Authentic podcast with Angie and Tanya. We are real estate pros, entrepreneurs, leadership gurus, and community enthusiasts. Our passion is sharing our experiences to enrich the lives of others. We hope to inspire you to live authentically.
Welcome back to the Simply Authentic podcast. I'm Tanya Murfin.
And I'm Angie Mullings. And we're excited to have a guest in studio today. It is Jocelyn Baldner, and she is the president and CEO of Central Bank.
So, welcome, Jocelyn. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, ladies.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Glad to be here.
Been trying to get you on. We've been wanting to have this conversation. You're a busy lady.
And yes.
So we're excited that you're here with us today. So tell our listeners a little bit about you. Give them some background. And
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am not a native of Springfield. I grew up in Higginsville, Missouri, excuse me, which is about 50 miles east of Kansas City. Small town, 5,000 people, came to Springfield for school back in 1995 and met my husband here in Springfield. He worked for Circuit City for a long time. And so we relocated several times. So Springfield was our first stop, but then we went to Cape Girardeau and Evansville, which is a lot like Springfield, back to Springfield after we had our third daughter. So I am the proud mom of three girls, 27, 23, and 21. And I have a grandson, and everybody lives here in Springfield. So
that's awesome.
We love that.
Yeah.
Love that. So has your, what has your career history been?
Yeah, so I've been a banker for 27 years.
Okay.
And I started in banking as a teller back in when we moved to Columbia. Actually, Jeff worked at Circuit City there. And when we went there, I had Riley, our oldest daughter, and I decided I needed to do something practical. We were going to be moving around and relocating for my husband's work, because that's what you do in big box retail. And so I thought, I really need to get into something that will be available wherever we move, and it's going to be easy for me to get a job because I wanted to work outside the home. And so went to work actually for a sister bank that I work for now. So Boone County National Bank is a sister bank to Central Bank. And went to work there as a teller and went up the ranks through the retail line of business. So think all the branches, all the ATMs, majority of the people in the bank are on that side of the business. And so that's what I did for several years. As we relocated to several different places, I got my first branch manager position in Evansville, Indiana, moved back to Springfield, and I thought, okay, I'm going to go back to work for Empire Bank. We were part of the same network. And I really, when I was in Evansville, I became part of a big sales program through banking. And so when I came back to Empire, I kind of joked and said, I think I have too much sales experience to go back to work there, because I instituted a sales program at Boone County in 1999, but we were not doing that yet at Empire Bank. And so I came back, we came back here in 2004. Went to work for a competitor for a short period of time, got recruited back to Empire Bank. And so became the branch manager at Empire Bank, and I worked my way to a sales manager. I did that for several years. It's really probably the core of my leadership development and developing other people, which is my greatest love, probably. I did that for about 7 years. I became the director of retail, so I was over the line of business at that point. And then I took on a role of director of business banking and took that line of business from a service line of business to a sales line of business, where we did both of those functions. And my boss came to me early and said, I really think that you could take my job. And I was like, what? I know. There's no way that I could do that. And he said, why not? And so from there, we started on kind of a trajectory of preparing me for this role that I'm currently in today.
Right.
And not knowing for sure that it would be something that I would be getting or not.
Sure.
Lots in between. I went back to school, got my bachelor's degree when I was 40. And finished that and went to Stonier Banking School, which is a leadership development and executive management program. So I did both of those things. Didn't really want to go back to school after completing the Graduate School of Banking program. I had done that for 3 years. You go for 2 weeks to Philadelphia every summer. And he said, you have to do this. It's just part of the deal that you have to check this box. And so I did, and I'm really glad that I did. It's completely different in relevance when you go back at that point of your life.
I'm sure.
I was very fortunate at Missouri State. I had spent some time there already, so I went in with a lot of hours. They have a program specifically designed for students like myself where I was able to get into all of the classes that I would need to do the current job that I'm in. So I was very fortunate that I was able to do that. So that's a very quick snapshot. If you have any follow-up questions, I'm happy to answer.
No, I love that because you started at the bottom rung.
I did.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you worked your way up. And so I love that part of the piece of your story that you have pretty much stayed true to Central Bank Empire, like you said, the sister banks. So stuck with it. But so it was not your dream to be in this industry for a long time. It wasn't your dream.
It wasn't. I often tell people, I think most people that are bankers that want to be a president and CEO, they probably know early on from their career that that is a goal and that is something that they wanted to do. Never had that aspiration. Russ Marquardt was my predecessor and mentor for 9 years. And he is who said, you know, this is something that you can do. It was really hard to picture, though, because what his experience was and what my experience was growing up in the banking industry did not look the same at all. He grew up through the lending line of business. I was never a lender. Right. I was not on the credit side of the bank or the lending side of the bank at all. And so seeing success through him and doing it that way, it was hard to see for me at first, how would I be successful? How would the bank be successful? How would our team be successful under my leadership where I have very different experience? Russ was a rainmaker. He was somebody that could develop business. And I had more of an internal role where I was developing the team to go out and take care of the customers. And I said, well, I'm willing to try, but it's going to look different. We're different leaders. We don't look the same. We don't do things the same, not meaning male and female, but we just didn't lead the same ways. And he said, that's why I see in you the things that the bank is going to need in the future. And so I think that there's a lot to be developed. He said, you know, you're a quick study. You learn quickly. You don't have to know the inside and outside of the lending space to understand what the importance of that piece of line of business plays to our organization. And he saw that from me when I was the director of retail. You know, it wasn't just about that line of business, the consumer. It was really about how do we fit into the whole of the bank. And that from this side of things, from the CEO side of things, that's what it's all about, is how do we all collectively work together to achieve what we're trying to achieve for the consumer.
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're the first female to be in the CEO role at Central Bank?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And as we sit here as three professional women, it statistically and historically has not been easy for women to climb that rung of the ladder and get to the top.
Right.
So what did that look like in that space of when you were, you know, Russ, and he was a great, I'm sure he was a great mentor. He was a great banker, and he has a great reputation in this area. So I'm certain you were led fantastically. But you're a female. And so he saw something in you, and you just acknowledged it was going to look different than what his leadership looked like. Mm-hmm. And that's a big piece of that, I would say, for a male who's been at the top to recognize in a female leader that she had different skills than he did. So I compliment that part of your story. But my question is, what did that look like with sometimes referred to an old boys club, especially in banking?
Right.
Mm-hmm. What did it look like for you to be groomed into that role and for acceptance of a female coming into that role?
Well, there's a whole lot to unpack here. So, you know, what's interesting is I didn't put a lot of thought into this prior to getting into this role, because in banking, on the retail side of the bank especially, there are a lot of female leaders.
Yes.
And so I had a ton of examples that, you know, Karen Taylor in Columbia, who, you know, she still says, I hired her. Watching her lead her team and be the director of retail. Terry Cantwell, our HR director. Amy Sharp, who's our retail director now. All powerful women leaders. And so, you know, I always said my results speak for themselves. That's I'm going to let my results speak for themselves. It was never really an issue to be a female, so to speak. And I don't, you know, Russ and I did not focus on that a lot. But what the things he did to prepare me and to allow me to go into this role successfully are, he put me at a lot of tables that I probably really didn't have any business being at. I didn't have the experience to sit at those tables. I did a lot of listening. I did a lot of absorbing. I made sure that if I had input, I gave input. But he put me in a position where people saw me and saw him doing that. And so he was very, he did that on purpose. That was very intentional that he did. And so when I got into this role, I still thought, you know, it hits the SBJ, the 417, you know, Biz 417. Everybody talked about, you know, the first female at Central Bank. And so the gravity of that probably didn't hit me until, you know, a little while into the job, because I thought, I'm just going to do what I've always done. I'm going to make sure that we perform. And that was my biggest fear, is I get into this role and we've been so successful for so long as a bank and I screw it up.
Right.
And I knew theoretically that wasn't likely to happen. Right. If you have a good team around you, that's what matters. You can't, it's not a one person show. Right. But I started getting the same question you just asked me a lot. And I thought, you know, I really need to sit down and think about what are the things that I did to prepare myself to take on this kind of role, because people, other women are listening. Other girls are listening. My girls watched from a front row seat the things that I did. And it was still about getting results, because that, of course, matters a whole lot. But when I could answer the question of what are the things in particular that you did in your role, it became really important that I was able to have that conversation with people that were coming up. And so I was able to articulate, I took on every crap job that you wouldn't think of, because I did it for learning purposes. I did it because I did love to lead. I love to be in charge of a team, in charge of a project. And I think that that came through in all the work that I did over time. And it is one of the reasons that Russ I think, you know, identified me as a successor. He was telling people for 5 years before he retired that I was going to be his successor. Mm-hmm. And I was in the background going, no, don't say that. Not because I was afraid I wasn't going to get the job. Honestly, because I wasn't sure I wanted the job. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the other thing is you do have to decide. Like, it's wonderful to be the CEO and the president. There's a lot of pressure that comes with it. There's a lot of things that come with it. But you do need to decide, not just because someone else wants it for you, mm-hmm. But because there is a greater purpose beyond yourself. And for me, that's really, you know, to make a lasting impact on that team. All the things that we do, just like you guys help people buy their home, I always remind people, remember what we're doing every day. Remember the financial decisions we get to participate in with our customers. And so being able to carry on what I do believe I helped build at Central Bank for the amount of time that I had been there was very appealing in looking at taking on this role. Mm-hmm. You talk about the male dominance. I honestly didn't feel that until I was the CEO. Mm-hmm. I know that sounds very strange. But I felt it from customers. I felt it from women, especially. And someone would say, this is Jocelyn. When I introduced myself, I would say, I work at Central Bank. And my friends would say, or my colleagues would say, she's the president of the bank. And people would say, oh, wow, really? You know, and it was especially came from women. And that was surprising to me a little bit. But I just think it wasn't the expectation. Mm-hmm. And because I did come up on a different side of the bank, automatically people think you're the president and CEO, so you're a lender. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that experience. So I had to navigate that as well. Mm-hmm. And I had to be okay with that myself before other people could be okay with it, that I had experts on the team that could assist them and it could look different and success could be built differently under my leadership. Mm-hmm. I may have missed something in there, but hopefully I answered your question.
It was a great answer. And I have some follow-up questions to that because we have, and I think it's interesting, Tanya and I have interviewed Brandi Harris a couple of times.
Yeah,
love Brandi. The first time she was on the program, she's talked about how she wasn't sure what a CEO looked like and how to fill those shoes. And eventually she had to figure out her own way. Whereas you had lots of great experience. You were groomed to take that role and understood what a CEO looked like, but now you have to make it your own.
Right.
So I'm curious what has we talk about culture a lot. We talk about how we've both built culture within our own companies. What exactly, I'm assuming that culture, you wanted it to look a little different under your leadership. But talk to us about what things you wanted. You didn't want to go in and change everything, and you had a great example, but what kind of things did you want to change to make it your own, so to speak, and go in a direction that you felt like they needed to go?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things that was important to me was that we had female executives. Because Tanya, you said earlier that it probably looked a little bit different between Russ and myself and our leadership. Mm-hmm. And I do think women lead differently.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I think the intuition, the innate ability to lead, it's different. Mm-hmm. How we interact with people and handle issues is different. I told Russ, I said, I have to do this my way because it will not be genuine otherwise. And he said, I'm counting on it. Mm-hmm. And so one, I needed more female executives around me to balance out our team. I felt like that was important, and that doesn't minimize the job that any of the male executives on our team were doing. But we were chasing some pretty audacious goals, and I felt like we needed that mix at the table in order for us to be ultimately successful. Yeah. The other thing that's, you know, kind of a funny story is I'm a collaborative leader. Russ was more of a give an order, take the order, do it. Mm-hmm. Not in a dictatorial way at all, but just that's how he led. Mm-hmm. And so the first few months that we were holding executive meetings, you know, I'm a collaborative leader. All of these people had worked with me. Okay. So nobody, sure. nobody was new to the table. They all knew what was happening. They saw along the way that I was probably going to be succeeding Russ. And so they had sat at the same executive table with me countless number of times. But what I realized was I was the one always at the table that would take the action items and go do something with it. I was the one who took away and followed up with mostly everybody else about what we needed to be doing. And so when I became the leader and I was expecting them automatically to be collaborative and do the same thing that I did, I walked away frustrated time after time after time. And it finally dawned on me probably about 3 months in, I'm like, they don't know how to collaborate because they're so used to, they're so used to, and that is not the culture I wanted. I needed everybody in their roles because when you get into a role, you understand what your gaps are and who and where you need those gaps filled. I wasn't the be-all to know every answer. I needed everybody on our team to be doing their job to the fullest and to be thinking strategically about where we needed to be going, what they needed in their line of business. So I had to back up and I had to set that expectation. And I really had to talk about why that was important and how it would benefit us and them long term in being a collaborative team. But it took quite a while because I'm thinking everybody should want this. We all, you know, no, it's what I wanted. It's how I thrived and operated. But it wasn't necessarily, but I was the leader of that in the past. And so it wasn't necessarily Russ doing that, but it's probably one of the things that stood out to Russ about me that made him want to see me in that role that he was in. We had a very strong culture. And so when I said I helped build part of that. And so for me, it was carrying on many of the things that we are known for, you know, being a community bank. What did that mean in our community? Some of it was putting a definition, a model, a value, a points of value around that so we could communicate, you know, what does it mean to be a community bank? What does it mean to give legendary service? So those things, we had all those components, but it was giving a voice to why some of those things were important. The other thing was just spending more time with employees and making sure that employees understood why those things were critically important. I started this role in 2021. Russ was slowly preparing to go out in 2020. So I was a very big part of what we were doing during the pandemic, how we were taking care of our employees during the pandemic, and then how do you transition back to kind of normal business, so to speak. And so that allowed me an opportunity, I'd say a unique opportunity of a big, massive thing that happened with our team to lead through that. So that was really important. The other thing is, I really do not believe in, I always have to be the one out front. I believe our team plays that role, and I'm there to support them. And so culturally, we've always had a really strong culture. You know, our when you ask employees on an employee survey, would you recommend Central Bank to work at? That's a measure of our success that we believe. And so 86% of our employees, which is 25% above the industry average, say they would recommend somebody to work at Central Bank. And so that's a true test of what we do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So you mentioned collaboration being a big, big part of your leadership. And Angie and I understand that language because we collaborate together on this podcast. That's one example at two different real estate companies. We became friends 8 to 10 years ago, volunteering at our board and under different company hats. And you have to sit at that table with people that maybe you've never had a great relationship with, and you got to get to know them and you got to learn how to collaborate. I think in our industry, it's always been, in years past, it's been, you know, what? You're going to sit down with somebody from another brokerage and share ideas? What? Surely you wouldn't do that. You know, so it's interesting to hear you describe your industry the same. And it's hard to change the learning curve, I guess I'd say, of somebody in a leadership position, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you come in with collaboration being secondhand to you,
right,
and you put that name on it, I like to collaborate. I want everybody's ideas, and mm-hmm. then we'll come up mm-hmm. with the top three ideas or whatever that looks like. That's some people just don't have the ability to. Their brain does not work that way.
Right.
So
they're not
the way
wired
you
that way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. the way you described it was mm-hmm. you had to relearn your team
Absolutely.
Of how to work together. Mm-hmm. They've always worked together, and they probably did it famously. But it is a different idea to sit down and collaborate and not be scared.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it puts a level of ownership on each person at the table.
Right.
Versus just the leader taking that ownership and that decision-making role.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the points of view are valuable to have varied points of view and
yeah.
varied ideas. And so it took time to build that and to get people exercising kind of that muscle of understanding it was okay. And also, it's okay if your idea doesn't get picked also.
True.
Because I think that's the other thing about collaboration sometimes is for people to feel safe in sharing, but then not have that final decision or their idea accepted to move on to kind of that final whatever we do.
Yeah.
And so that's a skill as a leader, too, that you have to figure out is you have to figure out how to get everybody collaborating. But at the end of the day, sometimes the decision has to be made and maybe it's a little bit different. It's all in how you communicate and figure that out with your team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and creating that safe space so that they do feel comfortable to bring ideas forward.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, not every idea is going to be accepted, and it's not against you. It's not a personal thing.
Right.
It's just there's a collective feeling that we should go a different way. Or
and I think when you as a leader can also show that your mind can be changed
mm-hmm.
or that you're mm-hmm. taking into account something maybe that you didn't consider along the way, it's powerful for mm-hmm. your team to be able to see that. Vulnerability,
yeah.
I think, is really, really important. And humility's
yeah.
been part of our culture for a long time, is we just jump in and we do it because that's what we're supposed to do,
mm-hmm.
Doing that right thing. And so that's been an example that has been modeled, you know, throughout our culture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Angela, I think it's a good time to take a break.
I think it is, too.
Okay.
We'll be right back with you.
Real Talk, Real Industry Insights. Simply Authentic is the podcast where realtors and referral partners get the conversations they actually want to hear. I'm Jack Langley at Gershman Mortgage. We've been helping home buyers and real estate professionals for over 70 years, and we know that success just isn't about transactions. It's about knowledge, relationships, and having the right tools to grow. That's why we're proud to host Simply Authentic in our studio, bringing you the most relevant, real, and sometimes challenging conversations that help us all get better. Tune in, subscribe, and let's keep this industry moving forward together. Simply Authentic, recorded at the Gershman Mortgage Studios, available wherever you get your podcast.
And we're back. And this is kind of a unrelated question, Jocelyn,
yeah.
but it is completely related. So what's it like to go back to college at 40? What are the
hard. It's yeah. hard.
What are the yeah. biggest challenges there?
So, you know, I went through the 3 years of graduate school of banking. So I kind of did things in reverse because you can actually get graduate hours from the program mm-hmm. that I went through.
Got it.
And I thought, yes, I'm going to do this. I had to do a capstone and present the capstone and do all of that. And when he said, you need to go back and get your bachelor's, I'm like, I already did this. And I, you know, and the other thing is for years in my career, I had to sit around a table every time we went around for introductions. And I was not able to say yep. that I had that bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I had finally progressed in my career enough where I got comfortable with that. And I was mm-hmm. okay with it myself. It wasn't a point of embarrassment any longer. So he said, you just have to do it. And, you know, I just knew I had kids at home. I knew how difficult it was going to be. I had a job that I was a 50-plus hour job already.
Yeah.
And I thought, how am I going to fit this in? And so we had a family meeting. And I said, okay, guys, look, I've got to do this, and I need everybody's support, and this is what it's going to mean for mom's time. And so, you know, I'm so happy that I did it, but 4 a.m. wake up call to 11 p.m., not cooking dinner for about a year and a half, not seeing your friends for about a year and a half, constantly, I'm sorry, I can't go, thank you for inviting me, don't give up, you know, this is going to be over. You know, I say it was one of the hardest things I've done, honestly. I had 40 hours to finish, and I wanted to do it in 1 year. I did it in a year and a half, and there was one semester that I took 10 hours, and I thought, I'm going to die. I'm going to die. This is so hard. But the sense of accomplishment once I was done was just incredible. I so bet. Very, very thankful I had the opportunity to do it, and that I did it. And it, and you know, somebody asked me one day, they said, did it really help you? Did it give, was it additive to what you're doing today? Right. And because I was able to really, get into more accounting and finance classes, it did help me a bit, in the role that I play today.
Great. Well, Jocelyn, I want to shift gears just a little bit because we've talked a lot about your experience at Empire, how you got to where you are. I want to really kind of focus in on the female factor, if you will.
Sure.
You mentioned a little bit ago that you would go around the room and you would introduce yourself as Jocelyn. You didn't include a title or anything. I find that a lot of women do that. And I'll never forget sitting at the chamber as a volunteer, and Jeff Seifert, I'll call him out on here, because he, after the meeting, he said, Angie, when you introduce yourself, you need to introduce yourself as the CEO, the president, the whatever, owner of Century 21. And you never do that. And you need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it interesting that somebody has to point that out to us.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to us, because I think that's a common thread with most women.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it goes back to that humility thing that I mentioned just a minute ago. And that was ingrained in me from, you know, the time I became a banker, probably a natural part of who I am to an extent. And so that felt like bragging, right? For us to mention what our title is. For me, I think sometimes it was, I didn't want anyone else to feel less than by me stating the title that I had and the position that I was in. And so I think that's a place where it comes from, where it's the same reason that I said I had to, I have to sit down and I really need to think about what the answers to those questions are that I keep getting asked, because there are people that are wishing for the roles that we're in, and they need to hear the way that it happened and the way that we made it happen, and we can't be embarrassed or belittle the things that we did in order to get there. And I do think sometimes it takes a recognition, something happens, something is said, a recognition to realize that you have others watching. And I had three girls. So you would think for me that it became very, it would be very natural for me to do that, so that they were in that same position where I was modeling. Well, for me, I was modeling quietly. I always said, you know, I wasn't the loudest leader in the room. You could be a quiet leader. I always saw that as a point of pride. And I think it goes back to, you know, exactly what you're saying is, as women, we are not, we don't promote ourselves. We we do that, and you do see multiple examples all of the time. And I think it's incumbent on all of us to do things like we're doing today, and to make sure that we're putting female executives on the executive team, and that we make sure that we're putting people out front. And so I feel like today I'm much more intentional about that than I ever used to be before. And I think that we cannot belittle the things that that we've accomplished. We have to be proud of the things that we've accomplished. And, you know, I sit at a table at a CEO meeting. I go four times a year, and I sit at a table with pretty much all men. And I literally was the first woman in the first meeting. I was the only woman attending that meeting. And I thought, okay, this is going to be fine. We were offsite somewhere at a club where they hunted and played a lot of golf. And I said, I'm not going to play golf just because I'm a CEO. I didn't play golf before. I'm not going to play golf just because I'm a CEO now.
Yeah.
And so that first meeting, I did some funny things. We had, it's a tradition in our company that you have to tell a joke or do something like at your first meeting. Well, I thought, okay, I'm going to play into the boys club because they just need to know I'm a normal person just like they are. Mm-hmm. And they don't need to, treat me any different. But now today we have about 5 women that are in that meeting. Out of 3,000 of our employees, 2/3 of our employees are women. Oh. At Central Bank across all of our markets. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at the C-suite and the senior leadership mm-hmm. group, we don't have the same ratio. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're improving and we're getting there. But I do think it's why I have to be more out front and intentional about what that means for our company. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that can be putting yourself in an uncomfortable conversation if you've operated from a position of humility mm-hmm. Your whole career. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really important for the people that came before and the people that are coming up along with me as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Agree with that.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about leadership on this podcast mm-hmm. yeah. and have a lot of community leaders that have been on it, like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
When you are maybe sitting at a table with people who don't hold the higher positions, and you need to teach them something,
sure.
right? You need to grab the young ones and bring them along. What are the things that you're most likely to teach them regarding leadership and regarding being a future leader?
Absolutely. I think, I've always been very vulnerable as a leader and tried to be as transparent as possible. So I think raising your hand when you don't know something is yeah. critically important. Mm-hmm. Don't pretend, don't be embarrassed that you don't know. You need to just establish that up front, and it's okay because most likely there's multiple people around the table that feel the exact mm-hmm. same way yeah. that you do. Mm-hmm. And if you can be the first to jump out and say something, you're demonstrating leadership.
Yes.
Give people the benefit of the doubt. Everybody wants to do a good job. I truly believe everybody really wants to do a good job. I think it's easy to judge and think, they did this because, they don't care. Most likely not. So mm-hmm. give people right. the benefit of the doubt in the positions that they are. For me, I genuinely love to lead people and develop people. And I think you really have to have a heart for people if you want to be a leader. Yeah. You mm-hmm. have to genuinely care about people. And if you don't and you want to truly be an individual producer and that's what you want to do, it's okay. Mm-hmm. But you need to know it mm-hmm. because I think that leadership is somewhat of a higher calling because you're responsible for other people. Mm-hmm, and if definitely. You can become comfortable with allowing a team of people's results be your results, then maybe you're meant to be a leader. But if you're not comfortable with that, then you probably shouldn't be a leader, because I think it's hard to be a leader at times, but it's one of the most rewarding things. And people can detect disingenuousness from Absolutely. A long way away. And yeah. and so I think you do really truly have to have a heart for people.
Mm-hmm.
Those would be the three.
Definitely.
And take every crap job, like I said earlier.
Yeah.
It teaches you. It yes. teaches yeah. you so much. And it exposes you to opportunities that you probably would not have otherwise if you're willing to jump in and do the things that other people are not.
Yeah, mm-hmm. very true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you have a formal leadership program within Central Bank and or mentorship program?
Yes, yes, and yes. So okay. So we do have something called Central Connect, mm-hmm. and that is designed kind of after Leadership Springfield. Mm-hmm. And so in 2016, in our strategic planning session, we said we have a lot of people retiring and we don't have a lot of people on the bench. Mm-hmm. And we've got to get this figured out. And mm-hmm. so we developed Central Connect. We just finished graduated our fifth class. You have to apply for it. Mm-hmm. We choose people that are emerging and current leaders because not everybody can be promoted. We need people in their positions that are really good at what they do because they can teach those around them and take really good care of our customers. And so we want to make sure that we expose them to all areas of the bank, specifically financially, how do we make money? Mm-hmm. Or not. Then they have a program or a project or a program that they do to kind of wrap up that. We teach them how to be a community banker through that program. Then we also have something called Leadership Essential, and that is for all of our people leaders. And it's just basics like coaching, performance counseling, coaching, how to have difficult conversations. Mm-hmm. It's those key skills around being a leader. And then we're actually getting ready to institute a mentorship, formal mentorship program in 2026.
That's mm-hmm. great.
That's, yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, because I think the strength of any organization is like you said, the people on the bench, who's coming up, who can fill those spots because retirement or moving or whatever, it, you know, you don't want to be left with those empty spots.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you think other banks around here or bordering states have the same leadership programs in place? Because I can't say, and we deal with bankers all the time, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we get to know them, and they're friends of ours. I can't say that I've had a lot of people say that to me. And just by Central Bank being a prominent advertiser in, you know, 417 Magazine or you being seen in different, you know, different publications and
sure.
such. I think I probably know more about Central Bank because you're out there. You put mm-hmm. yourselves out there and your mentorship programs or your leadership programs. But do you think other banks do that?
I do think that they have leadership yeah. programs because I've talked with several.
Sure.
So I think that they do have several leadership programs.
Yeah.
They don't like to give all their secrets away, you know.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm.
But we featured our Central Connect group in a 417 magazine
yes.
as
mm-hmm.
part of an editorial with a sponsorship that we did. I think I mentioned it in my Biz 100, one of those. I think that was one of the things that I mentioned. So
yeah.
I do think that others have leadership programs. I think they also utilize, if they're small, they probably don't run it in-house
sure.
Like we do. They probably utilize like the MBA,
yeah.
Missouri Banker Association,
yeah.
and those kind of programs for some of their leadership
yeah.
things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there anything in addition to anything you've already said that you would want any female out there to hear about staying true to who they are and having a goal in mind and knowing that anything is achievable?
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think find a group of women that can lift you up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that with me in this role, you know, when they say it's lonely at the top, I know that sounds cliche, but it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to go out and establish a group of women in this community that were in like positions
mm-hmm.
that would understand the challenges that I'm having. And we can all find that. I think
mm-hmm.
that it
yeah.
doesn't matter what level we're at. It doesn't matter if it's a friend group or a professional group. I think finding those women and men, honestly, that can mentor you and
mm-hmm.
that can assist you because it's, we never stop learning. There's,
mm-hmm.
we never stop growing in the things that we're trying to do. And that's been a huge part of my success is having a group of people around me that make me better.
Mm-hmm.
I always said, you know, I would stay true to who I was in this role because I can't be, it doesn't look right, doesn't feel right. I cannot be successful faking it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the other thing is it takes a lot of grit to really be that
yeah.
sometimes mm-hmm. and not to go along with the crowd of what everybody is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that would be my piece of advice is find that strength from within to really stay true to who you are because it has longevity. The other way does not.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great tip.
That's good.
Do you have any daily habits that help you be better, help you perform better?
Yes. Some days better than some, right?
Right. Always.
We're not perfect. That's the other thing. They're perfection's overrated.
Yes.
I do a gratitude journal. And sometimes, most of the time I do it in the morning. Sometimes I do it at night. I wish I could work out in the morning. I'm not a morning routine. I'm an evening routine person. Those are the two things in particular. And, you know, when I first got into this role, I went hard for 2 years and I was like, okay, time out. I've got to get back to, I had a routine. I was, you know, doing very well prior to taking on the role. And, you know, I think that's the other thing. We all have to acknowledge there's seasons and cycles with everything. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you got to run hard, and other times when we're taking care of our parents or doing other things, it's time to call a timeout. And you can do that when you kind of have consistency through your performance all along. So, very true.
We just had a session with Lori Robertson, and she said at the end of we did a couple of exercises with her, and at the end we wrapped up with pick one thing that you're going to start that will help you achieve your goal. And then the piece that I really like is find someone who can help you with that. Mm-hmm. And that goes to what you just said about having this group of people. I want to make the point that don't ever be afraid to ask.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah, that's right. Because I have found so many people that we get into a conversation and they're like, me too. I'm dealing with that too. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very common. And so kind of back to that vulnerability, try to connect, you know, and I think we're all dealing with very similar things. And I love Lori, by the way. She's amazing.
She is. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. We appreciate you coming in and talking to us and our listeners, of course.
Absolutely. Yes. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you for listening. We appreciate that you are taking the time out of your day to listen. And we hope that you will share this episode with someone who needs to hear the advice from Jocelyn.
Yes. And we want to thank our premier sponsor, Great American Title. And we want to thank Gershman Mortgage for recording with us. And we'll catch you guys on the next episode.
See ya.
Find today's full video by searching the Simply Authentic Podcast on YouTube. Hit subscribe, and there you will find full videos of every episode.